Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media, broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side, from Mad Radio 92.7 FM WMDX 1580 AM, and around the state of Wisconsin on a Civic Media radio station near you, whether you're up north near Amory for Lake Air WLAK 1260 AM, or maybe by the Bay in Green Bay, the talk of Green Bay, WGBW, you can learn more about Civic Media. And excited on this Tuesday afternoon, a little bit earlier than normal, but Dan Schaefer, founder of the Recombobulation Area, joining me on a Tuesday afternoon. Dan, how are we doing today?
We're hanging in there. How are you?
I'm still, somebody noted it to me, Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show, noted it to me. He's like, Luke, you are the largest Bucks fan here at Civic Media, and he's constantly checking in on me, but then also simultaneously reminding me of last week's defeat, and it gets harder and harder, but it is what it is. I've watched about a game and a half of other NBA teams playing now total since the Bucks' early exit to the NBA playoffs, but it's been an interesting week, Dan. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, last time I joined you last Tuesday, we were talking about, you know, the Wednesday night game, and I was not particularly optimistic about the Bucks coming back and winning the series against the Heat, but I was like, let's just win at home. Let's not lose in devastating fashion at home on a Wednesday night. I feel like I kind of accidentally spoke that into existence on the show here, because that's exactly what happened. They lost in devastating fashion at home to an 8 seed on last Wednesday night.
They did.
And I'm still not over it. I was on As Goes Wisconsin yesterday, and Kristen was asking me how I was doing recovering from the Bucks loss, and I think I'm still kind of working my way through denial.
Still the first,
can't believe the season's over.
Yeah, that's the
don't
first
really stage. Know what to do with myself not having three or four Bucks games to watch every week. So I don't know. I guess maybe I'll get more into the Brewers this year. Maybe I'll get into like Premier League soccer or something like that. I don't know. There's some options.
Hey, JJ Watt, Wisconsin native and former NFL player, getting into
and fellow Pewaukee High School alum.
There
JJ
you go.
Watt. He and I went to the same high school. Fun fact.
Well, he's retiring from retirement. He's getting very involved in English soccer as well. So maybe that's an avenue. But for me, I'm trying to dive in to keep an eye on what's happening at the state capitol right now with the budget season, because this I thought was going to be something fun that we would get to pay attention to the Bucks and the budget at the same time, but that's not the case. we're stuck with just the budget, and we've got the first vote coming today from the Joint Finance Committee here in Madison about stripping nearly 500 different policy proposals out of the Evers budget proposal. And Dan, let's recombobulate, see what's going on a little bit with the budget here in Wisconsin. So 500 different provisions. They're going to take it down to the studs, essentially. They're going to take the Evers budget down to the studs. Your thoughts on the vote JFC is going to take today, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what we expect from the Republican budget process in Wisconsin, is that, you know, Tony Evers will propose the budget in a normal state where in more nor or a purple st- or a, you know, more conventional purple state, you might have, you know, some opportunities for bipartisanship. There are some very popular policies in this budget that are going to be eliminated. By the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee with a vote today, getting rid of, I think the total number is more than 545 proposals from the governor's budget. These include things like Medicaid expansion, paid leave, more than $230 million for student mental health, replacing lead pipes, a cap on insulin copays, a tax cut on those making less than $100,000, marijuana legalization.
The list goes on and on.
Free school meals for children. And, you know, just on down the line. There's a lot of stuff that they are removing from the budget that, you know, has broad bipartisan support. But that's the state we live in, that those are, you know, getting eliminated. And, you know, considering all the losses the Republicans continue to take at the statewide level, as they have in, you know, in the race for governor, in the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court, you'd think maybe they would recognize that they have gone way too far to the right on many of these issues, completely ignoring any kind of bipartisanship in Madison over the past 4 years when Tony Evers, Tony Evers' first term as governor. Nope, they're not going to be doing anything differently this time. And it is, you know, even though Tony Evers won by a greater margin than in his initial victory, you know, they're not changing their tune anytime soon. And so it's basically they're going to, you know, toss basically all of the budget and rewrite it wholesale. And, you know, you would think that this would be a time where Republicans would maybe recognize that, you know, Wisconsinites have spoken with their votes and said they want to see the direction that Tony Evers would like to take the state. Once again, predictably not happening.
Yeah. And so it's very fascinating. And out of interest, I saw it today, had the thought pop in my head. I was like, well, how many individuals voted for these two chairs? There's co-chairs to the Joint Finance Committee. And these are going to be the two individuals really directly overseeing how these votes are going to take place of the Joint Finance Committee, determining to strip out these more than 500 proposals out of the Evers budget. And I was just like, out of curiosity, we got State Representative Mark Bourne out of Beaver Dam, and we've got State Senator Howard Markline out of Spring Green. And so I went and saw how many votes they got in 2022 in their most recent election. And State Representative Mark Bourne, 20,000 individuals voting for Mark Bourne. Howard Markline, 44,434. Governor Tony Evers got 1.3 million votes in 2022. And we've got a state senator and a state representative that collectively got about 60,000 votes, stripping out the votes that 1.3 million Wisconsinites said, hey, this is who we want leading the state. Governor Tony Evers is our pick. We want his ideas. We want his leadership. And the Joint Finance Committee taking this just sweeping motion to rip this budget down to the studs is... it's upsetting, Dan. And the fact of the matter is, I don't see how Republicans, at the same time, they're arguing, they're looking at states like Minnesota and Illinois and Michigan in the Midwest saying, hey, look at those states. They have flat taxes. We should have a flat tax like those states. And then anything else of these provisions, paid leave going on in Minnesota right now, marijuana legalization in Michigan, any of those different proposals, they're like, oh, no. That's way too drastic. We can't go there. And just the juxtaposition of their stances on these, I feel can't be more different, Dan, but it seems like there's not a really coherent thought process for the Republican elected officials here in Madison.
No, there is one through line through all of it is in all of their economic proposals. Always they want to cut taxes on rich people. You know, the only time that they have ever wanted Wisconsin to be more like Illinois is when it involves a tax cut for rich people in the flat tax proposal, because they're saying, oh, well, Illinois has a flat tax. All these other states have a flat tax. Minnesota doesn't. Wisconsin doesn't. And I think it should stay that way.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, just getting back to some of the budget stuff, I think, you know, it's so frustrating because we see, you know, we see polling on so many of these issues, and we see, you know, so many people get involved in these listening sessions and showing up and being part of the process. And you know, you didn't have a lot of people showing up to budget sessions saying, yeah, we don't want Medicaid expansion. We don't want to invest in students' mental health. We don't want to fund the replacement of lead pipes. We, you know, we don't want to continue the prohibition of marijuana in Wisconsin. It's all these different things that it's just really not a budget built on what the people say. And here's the thing. And I think one of the Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee from Milwaukee, Evan Goyke, made this point today, was that, you know, Republicans are voting to say no to all of these. We have not seen any of their, beyond the flat tax, we have not seen any of their proposals for what they might want to do when it comes to, you know, healthcare and transportation and education and all these different parts of the budget that they're removing. We haven't seen what their proposals are. Like, you know, I might not agree with all of Governor Evers' proposals for the budget. In fact, last week I wrote a column about his Brewer's proposal that I disagree with. But to the governor's office's credit, they make this stuff pretty clear about what they want to do. They'll put a press release out. You know, it includes comments from the governor, from whatever appropriate cabinet secretary, and they'll have like a long breakdown of what exactly the policy and the proposal is. And you never see any of that from Republicans. So it's just, you know, it's just really frustrating to see. It's a process that, frankly, I think should be revisited when we have a new state Supreme Court, because, you know, the structure of the Joint Finance Committee and the way this budget process works, you know, is the type of thing that I've kind of heard that should maybe get another look from the, you know, from the legal minds of Wisconsin to see if this is really the constitutional way that you know, things should work.
Yeah, that's absolutely something I feel like may get another look as well. We're going to have a lot of things come August, I believe. August 1st. August 1st. So after then, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of things revisited. It'll be very interesting to keep an eye on. But speaking of that piece, I really enjoyed a line out of it that the Evers administration, your comments on the budget, or not the, it was a budget provision, but the budget provision to address the stadium at American Family Field in Milwaukee lacks imagination. So we're going to dive into that a little bit more coming up in this next segment. We'll also take your tangents, 844-967-2789. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. I'm joined on this Tuesday afternoon by Dan Schaefer, founder of the Recombobulation Area. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to follow us online, you can share your tangents after the show. Following us on Twitter at Dueling Tangents. I am joined now by the founder of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer. And we're talking about the budget process that is now taking the next steps here in Madison, the Joint Finance Committee, taking a vote to remove 500 different provisions, more than 500, 545, I believe was the exact number, out of the Evers budget proposal, taking the budget pretty much down to the studs and going to start rebuilding it, allegedly. We don't know what those plans are, as Dan pointed out. Republicans a little short on ideas, at least sharing the ideas. I thought, Dan, that after 9 months of taking some time off from those really grueling legislative sessions, they would be ready to hit 2023 here with a ton of different ideas. But just before jumping on the air today, the Joint Finance Committee unleashing its provisions for the shared revenue address that their budget will include. We'll have to dive into that in a future edition of Dueling Tangents because, yes, it dropped, but I hadn't had any time to take a look at it. Some rough numbers out of Milwaukee, though. Doesn't look great. There's a lot of provisions.
They announced this last week. Didn't have a draft bill of it yet when they announced it last week in Milwaukee. Now they do, and it came out 10 minutes before I came on the show. So I'm still a little discombobulated by that one. But I think there's a quote from a Milwaukee legislator who kind of sums up what the deal is for the city. LaTanya Johnson, who is state senator, who is on the Joint Finance Committee. She said today in a press conference, and I'm quoting from Emily Fannin's Twitter here, State Senator LaTanya Johnson said, "Anything proposed will be like holding a loaded gun to our head. It's either we accept what's on the table or we watch the city of Milwaukee go bankrupt."
Yeah.
It's not what we're looking at.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly the most inspiring time to be talking about this deal. But well, again, like you said, we can dive into it next week when I come on the show or something like that.
Yeah. Once we get both a chance to further look at those details, I just know that the grievance politics around streetcars is still included. So that'll be fun and interesting to dive into. And I can't wait to recombobulate around that. But mm-hmm. one of the proposals that Robin Voss essentially said was dead on arrival was the Evers proposal for reimagining what would the investment the state would provide for American Family Field, the ballpark owned by the county, is my understanding, but has got a different agreement with the team of the Brewers. So there's going to be some investment from the Brewers, some investment from the state, but the Republicans in the Capitol don't really want the state to have to invest in it, and it seems like it's kind of a whole different process, Dan. So what can you share about your piece over at the Recombobulation Area, talking about the lackluster of imagination from the Evers side, but also the Republican side saying, well, we don't really want to fund this at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think... You know, it's a really interesting item that kind of came out of nowhere, right? I don't think any of us were really expecting to get a press release in our inbox in February about making sure the Brewers stay in Milwaukee for the next 20 years. But that's what we got in February. And Evers is basically, it's a pretty straightforward proposal in a lot of ways, where it's just kind of using about $300 million out of the $7 billion surplus that the state has to fund upgrades and maintenance at American Family Field. And I think, you know, there's so many different takes on stadium funding and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And most of the time, stadium deals are not good ones. They are, you know, public dollars that could be better spent, you know, on things like education and healthcare and all these different other types of things that are, you know, frankly, underfunded and are hollowed out public sector, especially is in the case in Wisconsin yeah. for the past decade plus. But I think in some cases the deals can be good. And I think the Bucks Arena deal proved to be a pretty good one. You know, it has proved to, you know, it kept the Bucks in Milwaukee, the west side of downtown, and created this like massive gathering place, an iconic gathering place in the Deer District outside the arena. There's development kind of popping up more and more outside of the Five Surf in the Deer District. So it can be successful. But I think this one, as I wrote in the piece, just does not have that kind of transformative goal or you know, impact that you would want a stadium deal like this to have. And I think there's, you know, there's so much potential around American Family Field and on the west side of Milwaukee, in, you know, places in the town of West Milwaukee, West Dallas, all those kind of different places that are kind of converging together right around the stadium there. There's such great opportunity to do something differently, to really like leverage this investment, to have some sort of transformative impact. And that's not what we're seeing in this. Yeah. And I think much like the I-94 expansion proposal that I was very critical of from Tony Evers, this, much like that, just suffers from a lack of imagination.
Yeah. And so that is going to be the $7 billion surplus of question around here is how do we improve the imagination around investing in Wisconsin, investing in Milwaukee, in Madison, but also all around the state, in every area of the state? How can we take this historic budget surplus and invest it rather than just say, you know what, we're going to cut a bunch of people's taxes and it's going to overly affect the wealthiest earners here in Wisconsin? It is definitely something that I think we need to better infuse into our dialogue around these decisions and these issues. And I really greatly appreciate all the work that you do at the Recombobulation Area. Real quick, we got about less than a minute here. How can listeners find you at the Recombobulation Area, Dan?
You can find me on Substack, the Recombobulation Area. Substack.com. Find me on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, where I am not currently tweeting about the Milwaukee Bucks.
Not for a little bit, but then there's going to be some off-season moves that will need to happen, and the Bucks commentary will come back sooner rather than later, I believe.
We'll get there.
Thanks so much for joining me on this Tuesday afternoon, Dan. You have a great rest of your day. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents. We're going to get to your tangents, 844-967-2789, when we get back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to take us with you on the go, whether you're leaving any of the listening areas or you just want to jump from station to station in the comfort of your own home, you can do so on the Civic Media app, downloaded wherever apps are downloaded on your smart device, Apple or Google Play stores. And we're going to get into a little story about a horse with no name in a little bit here. But before there, let's head over to the phone lines. We're going to take a tangent or two. We got Bill in Fond du Lac calling in. Bill, what's on your mind this Tuesday afternoon?
Bill, one thing I got to say is, you probably have the best show on this network, and I'm just going to be honest with you. I can actually learn something from your show, and I appreciate it. And no one will ever consider or confuse me with being a liberal, but I do think that Dan had some good points, and it's a lack of imagination. And on the Democratic side, I think that if you folks really wanted to, you know, work and deal with the Republicans, putting the flat tax up against the marijuana bill, or, you know, allowing for purchase of marijuana would be a good negotiating tactic. I think part of the problem is that there isn't a real strong Democratic leader in this state other than Tony Evers. And this is coming from the other side, all right? And I just think that, you know, years ago you could think of Democratic legislators, whether it be Fred Risser or Peter Barca or, you know, multitude of others. You're missing that leadership on the Democratic side to actually put forth either the arguments or the proposals to really negotiate on these topics.
I appreciate those kind words, Bill. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that assessment of the state of leadership in either political party here in Wisconsin. Are you telling me that there's some imaginative leaders for the Republican side here in Wisconsin?
I'm saying that there's an opportunity for good Democrats to put up a good fight against guys like Devin LeMahieu and Robin Voss. I mean, you guys talk about those two people a lot on your show, and that's what we hear about. So I know that those are the guys that you dislike. I can't think of many Democrats that you guys bring up on a consistent basis. I think that Chris Larson is just milquetoast. There's nothing there. I think you need a stronger leader, and you guys, I think.
But Tony Evers is that leader of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin. I'm not flying the flag for Democrats here. I'm just pointing it out, Bill. The governor would be that leader, or you think there needs to be more?
Well, I think there needs to be more on this legislative side to have these fights. It shouldn't just be against the Republicans against the governor. It should be the Republican legislature against the Democratic legislature. But without a strong voice on that side, I mean a real strong, dynamic voice on that side, it just gets missed. It's lost.
Okay.
And I'm definitely not a Democrat. I just think that you guys really need somebody to be a leader on that side, and it's just not there, I don't think.
Well, as Dan pointed out, State Representative Goyku, who is on the Joint Finance Committee, was commenting on the provisions and the votes taken by the Joint Finance Committee today to strip these 545, I want to keep saying 50, but it's 500 provisions out of the Evers budget proposal. So I appreciate the advice, Bill. Appreciate you listening and appreciate your phone call. 844-967-2789. You can be like Bill, share a tangent with me here on a Tuesday afternoon. Is it Democrats' fault of lack of imagination? Because I can't imagine that there's not a lot of creativity and imagination coming out of the Republican side either. They have, as Dan Schaefer, founder of the Recombobulation Area, pointed out, Republicans here in Wisconsin have one proposal, and it's to cut taxes for wealthy individuals or just cut taxes in general. And that's their proposal for everything. They have a flat tax. They shied away from their flat tax proposal throughout the November 2022 midterm election and gubernatorial election because of how unpopular a flat tax actually is. I would say that the provisions included in the Evers budget that I think all four of the Joint Finance Committee Democrats, because it is a committee of 16 lawmakers, only a quarter of them, in a 50-50 purple state, a quarter of them are Democratic lawmakers because of the gross gerrymander here in Wisconsin. So I can appreciate your point, Bill, of saying that there needs to be more Democratic leaders. But at the same time, there could be a larger bench of Democrats if the state was more fairly represented like it should be. Robin Voss says, oh, we're not a deep blue state, we're a purple state. But the purple state that is severely gerrymandered and gives Robin Voss an unbalanced influence at the state capitol. And so it is very, very telling, and appreciate the Bills listening from the other side, and that the individuals out there believe there may be an imbalance when it comes to Democratic creativity. I think the Democrats are very creative when it comes to actually addressing the problems the state is facing. I don't believe a flat tax, the Republican proposal, is how we attract the 130,000 workers this state will be shy come the end of this decade. I just don't think that's what solves it. But I think the imagination of Democratic lawmakers proposing to have a comprehensive paid leave program here in the state, that could attract more young families. To expand Medicaid and Badger Care here in Wisconsin and remove Wisconsin from being an island when it comes to that federal proposal not being accepted here. Wisconsin, one of the final 10 states to expand Medicaid and Badger Care. I think doing that would be a huge step in addressing the worker shortage that we're going to have. But it does baffle me a little bit that Bill's going to say it's the Democrats that have the lack of imagination, but love to hear your thoughts on it. 844-967-2789. Headline coming out today over at the AP, and this is something that we talked about a lot here over the last several months, if not longer, throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, and now as the legal battle unfolds. Got a headline over at the AP. Wisconsin Supreme Court won't order ivermectin ivermectin use for COVID. Evan, did you see this one? The court is not going to mandate ivermectin to be used to cure COVID.
Thank goodness. We really skirted by on this one, you know? Just, wow. thank goodness.
Hey, man, this was an interesting one. And interestingly enough, here in Wisconsin, speaking of a purple state, we don't see a whole lot of 6-1 state Supreme Court decisions, but 6-1 on this one. Reading from Harm Venhuizen's piece over at the AP, Wisconsin's conservative-controlled Supreme Court ruled today that hospital could not be forced to give a deworming drug to a patient with COVID-19. The panel ruled 6-1 in favor of Aurora Healthcare, with 3 liberals and 3 conservatives in support, and only conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley dissenting. It is going to be a fascinating dissent. And again, just like earlier today, the news breaking for Republicans finally releasing their Joint Finance Committee's stance on the shared revenue formula here in Wisconsin moving forward this upcoming biennial budget. I cannot wait to dive into that and this dissent by Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley.
What a world. What a world where this is even a headline. This is crazy.
This has been one that we've been tracking here at Dueling Tangents as
I know,
well. We've been keeping an eye on this one, and this was
insane.
The insane part was that the Waukesha County judge ruled that Aurora had to
administer. I wanted to say deliver, but it would be administer the ivermectin at that point. And so this has been going through the courts here in Wisconsin since it's got to be at least almost 2 years now.
Evan. Judge just wished he could walk into a hospital and demand whatever he wanted, you know?
October 2021, when doctors refused to treat his uncle, John Zingsheim, with ivermectin. And it was Alan Gall who sued. And so it is insane. Gall was authorized to make a medical decision for Zingsheim, and he had researched the drug online after Zingsheim was put on a ventilator to treat COVID-19 complications. Ivermectin became popular among conservatives after commentators and even some far-right doctors held up the antiparasitic drug as a miracle cure for the coronavirus and other illnesses. I'll point out there, one of the individuals that was promoting ivermectin, Wisconsin senior senator, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson.
I'm no doctor, but I watch Fox News.
He's just asking questions. That was all the senator was doing. He was just asking questions. So this one here in Wisconsin, 6-1 state Supreme Court decision, Aurora Health not mandated to administer ivermectin to a patient, even though the patient got a prescription from a retired doctor. That was the weird part, too. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to share a tangent with us on this Tuesday afternoon, you can give us a call. Send us a text, 844-967-2789. We got Bill in Oconomowoc calling in now. Bill, what's on your mind today?
I just love that ivermectin. You know, I've been involved with hunting dogs and training and boarding dogs and all that. Ivermectin is for dogs, not for people. Sorry. The problem is going to be massive. Lawsuits are going to happen because of people that prescribed ivermectin. If you read, I mean, I know enough about ivermectin. If you got cattle with worms, well, you've got the right medicine. But if you've got people with COVID, you definitely have the wrong medicine. And the idea that you can take that, and just because Fox News and Jesse Waters thinks it's a good idea, that doesn't have any basis for anything, which tells me if I'm a young guy out of law school, I want to get my buddies together and do maybe a pro bono. So remember, they sued the cigarette business for causing cancer. So don't kid yourself that they're not going to sue for COVID. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling COVID has altered a lot of the daily practices here in the United States. I think there's going to be a lot of ramifications. We're still seeing them. We're in the endemic phase now, but there's a lot of strings still from COVID. And I have a feeling some of these lawsuits, this one obviously being one of them that we're finding out today, the Wisconsin Supreme Court had this before them, and they announced the decision in their ruling today that hospitals cannot be mandated to provide medicine that they believe is substandard. And it is important, Bill, to point out, it is medicine typically used in animals, horses, cattle, dogs, as you referenced. I believe my pup gets ivermectin for deworming. So it is absolutely one of those things. I don't know where COVID politics are going to be, though, because and we're seeing it still on display that Ron DeSantis, Republican governor down in Florida, trying to play COVID politics still. I don't know if the aggrieved individuals in the Republican Party that want to scream about lockdowns are going to be super successful in trying to push those COVID politics. But we're still going to see the ramifications of what this country endured throughout the last 3 years when it came to this novel virus and our response to it. And there's going to be a lot of people, Bill, that point out, well, see, it didn't get that bad. It wasn't that bad. Why did we have to lock down? But at the time, it was, again, any restraints that we took saved lives. And it's impossible to prove what lives we wouldn't have saved had we not locked down. It's just not something that you can prove. And so I believe erring on the side of safety was the right thing to do. Stopping the spread and doing what you could to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 was the right thing to do for our policymakers, for our business owners, for everybody. As a community, as a society, we needed to address that virus. And there are going to be a lot of people. I'm sure that, you know, we got ambulance chasers for tons of different things. Whether or not a doctor prescribes somebody ivermectin, maybe they're going to go back and try to argue against them now. Or maybe we're going to see other lawsuits try to come out. But this is one here in Wisconsin. We know the Wisconsin Supreme Court agreeing with an appeals court that the Waukesha County judge did not cite a legal basis for ordering the court to administer the ivermectin. So that one getting tossed, a healthcare provider not being required to administer substandard care in their opinions. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. If you want to share a tangent with us on this Tuesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. We're going to get some more headlines and your calls coming up next. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to Dueling Tangents around the state of Wisconsin, a civic media station near you. If you want to learn more about what we're doing as an expanding radio network, head over to the website civicmedia.us. You can see all the stations, all the fine, excellent programming that we offer, and you can sign up to learn more to see where the next station may be popping up in your neck of the woods. Again, civicmedia.us is the website. And we got a headline as well breaking earlier today. Wisconsin is going to receive more than $324 million in opioid settlement funds in the action taken by the State Budget Committee earlier today. They voted unanimously to accept those funds again. The Joint Finance Committee, I believe, I may be mistaken, Evan, but I believe had to take that vote to accept those funds because of the power grab that the Republicans did in 2018 after Governor Tony Evers won and stole that power. Lawsuits having to be approved now by the Republican-controlled legislature.
Creativity is a word I would use for it. It's a word.
Not even, Evan, because in 2018, the Republican lawmakers here in Wisconsin were just copycats to what the Republican lawmakers did in North Carolina in 2017. So that wasn't even an imaginative idea. They stole it from another state. They don't have the creative ideas. But again, maybe we got to be bigger critics of others, I guess, and just Bill pointing that out, saying, hey, I think we do a pretty good job as well, getting individuals like State Representative Francesca Hong. She's been on the show. We've reached out trying to have her on again soon, hopefully. Clinton Anderson, a freshman representative from the Beloit area. He's the one that's sharing the details with us here on Dueling Tangents about renewed bipartisan efforts in the state capitol, something that I think Robin Voss has stifled in recent years.
And I think creativity has become synonymous with skullduggery, essentially. I like boring politics at the end of the day. It shouldn't be...
True.
It shouldn't be like
it doesn't
movie.
Have to grab your attention every single time. It takes the hard work of individuals, like here at Dueling Tangents, that we make it fun, but some of the headlines, they should be boring. Yeah. They shouldn't be all... I think in that regard, Evan, I think Donald Trump really ruined a lot of the perspective around that one.
Cause we changed the game. Yeah.
He was the spectacle. He made it the spectacle. And then maybe I think you might be onto something there. But let's head over to the phone lines. Let's get some more tangents involved here. We got Karina in Milwaukee calling in. Karina, what's on your mind this Tuesday afternoon?
Hi. I think it's, I want to talk about two things. First, the imagination point. I think that Republicans don't have an imagination, but what they do have, a lot of presence, like a silly, very unused, unneeded, but they are everywhere. They're talking about themselves constantly and make themselves popular and make themselves project what they want to people and how greatly they will be benefit of it. So that's what Republicans do have. They have a much more presence and they're more active. They're busy and everything like that. I can agree. Imagination, they are none.
Karina, I gotta ask you, did you find or get a hold of any of the Republican lawmakers here in Wisconsin from March, the first week of March last year through the end of the year? I don't know if they're getting out there. They're not answering the phones. They're not legislating. They don't do a whole lot when they're tasked with coming up with compromise. No,
it's impossible. It's practically impossible to get. I tell you this. One of the our Republican senators actually have a huge older population building, so that people who are 55 and older can rent an apartment. It's like a senior independent living. About 1,500 people living in there. So I finally was able to call to his office and talk to the secretary and ask if we can go into those buildings and do the vaccine, because I work for a pharmacy. It took him exactly 5 seconds to call me back, the secretary, not him, actually his secretary, to tell me no. I was trying to...
That's a pretty quick response rate compared to other instances, but...
For a week and a half, he didn't even thought about it. It was the answer. She called me right away back saying he said no to 1,500 old people to do the vaccination. So then they are real quick to say no, to say what they wanted to say about their policy. They're very quick. But when you
that's what they did today as well, Karina, with rather than take 545 separate no votes, they just lumped them all into one and removed all 545 provisions out of Evers' budget proposal in one vote.
You know why? Because they already haven't been working for almost 2 years, and now you're asking them to sit down and read 400 pages of proposal. You're kidding me. No, they're not going to spend time. They're asking for more money. They're asking for their salary, but yet they want to cut budget of everybody else.
And
this is very, very unique and very, very, what is it? What is the word was we were talking about? Imaginative.
Yeah.
Creative. Oh, yeah, of course. You don't have you don't need much of a creation to figure out how to hop on the money from the government you hate and say that we don't need it, yet you don't want to work, and you want to cut off everything what else we have. How you can possibly say... how we can possibly say that the Milwaukee City on the brink of a bankruptcy with the budget when we have overplus in the state? How is it possible?
Because the city of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee, Karina, have sent more money to the state coffers than they've received in return through shared revenue. And so while the city and county have been starved, they send the money still to the state capital. The money gets there. It's in the coffers. We got a $7 billion surplus in the general fund here in Madison. But the state has not been sending it back at the levels from... It stopped. It got stagnant in the 80s and 90s. And it did not keep up with the rate that the city of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee needed. And therefore, there are now budget problems because the city and the county... had the money. They were sending they're the largest tax base in the state. They're sending in state funds still. The general fund of Wisconsin is getting the money from Milwaukee, the city and county of Milwaukee. But the city and county are not getting back a shared revenue that would keep up with the model. And therefore, there's going to be a lot of tough budget questions. And as Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area pointed out, the comments from State Senator LaTanya Johnson, that it seems very much the Republicans are prepared to put a budgetary weapon up against the city and county and say, you accept this offer or it's bankruptcy. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents. Really appreciate Dan and all the phone callers joining me on this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow on Wednesday at 2 p.m. Talk to y'all then.